So for investors, if they're not engaging with their occupiers, if they don't have an occupier engagement strategy, they really don't have a decarbonization strategy. Green leases can sort of ensure that they're going through the system, through the legal mechanisms necessary so that they can ensure engagement with their tenants and ensure that their tenants are also kind of coming to the table as well.
According to JLL, tenant activity accounts for 55 to 75% of operational emissions from office buildings. It's 90 to 100% of emissions from industrial and retail properties. So for owners, collaborating with tenants on green lease provisions is critical for reaching net zero targets. For tenants who want to reduce their carbon footprint, influencing the performance of the buildings they occupy through these agreements is also a significant lever. Then why isn't this seemingly win-win practice part of every lease agreement? Welcome back to Sustainability Street, our podcast on the intersection of commercial real estate and the world we live in. I'm your host, Therese Fitzgerald. For this episode, I interviewed experts about the importance of green leases, the challenges and opportunities, and some best practices for making green lease agreements more effective. Let's get started. Green leasing began in Australia about 15 years ago as a way to get owners and tenants to share in the responsibilities and benefits of improving building efficiency. The impetus originally came from owners who wanted to lower emissions and prepare for upcoming regulation. But today, more tenants have their own targets and compliance concerns. And that is giving the industry optimism that green leasing will really start to gain momentum. So why can't CRE get to where it needs to be with traditional leases? The main reason is the traditional lease structures have what is referred to as real estate split incentive.
So with the split incentive, one party is generally responsible for investing in upfront costs, usually the landlord, and the other party, the tenant, reaps the savings from the project.
That's Diana Lee, Associate Director of Business Engagement at the Institute for Market Transformation, which together with the Department of Energy runs the Green Lease Leaders Awards Program.
So if I'm a landlord for an office building and decide to replace all of the equipment to higher efficiency models, the tenant is the one that sees the savings in their energy bills, but I am the one paying that upfront cost. So with this situation, it's really difficult to justify projects economically, and there's no motivation to invest in efficiency capital projects at the building.
Lee says traditional landlord-tenant agreements can also restrict who sees vital building performance data and usage data.
So again, if I'm a landlord with a building performance goal, but my tenant controls their utility bills and doesn't want to share that utility consumption information with me, I don't have any visibility into how my building is actually performing against the target.
The Green Lease Leaders Awards Program was created in 2014 with the idea of overcoming the split incentive and setting a standard for green leases. Platinum winners in 2023 included SL Green, Empire State Realty Trust, Lendlease, and Dream Industrial on the owner side. IBM, TD Bank, and MasterCard were platinum honorees on the tenant side. Lee points to the growth of the three-year program as a strong indicator that green leases are catching on.
So Green Lease Leaders makes up nearly 14.5% of commercial lease spaces in the U.S. As of the most recent application cycle. And then since our program inception in 2014, we've seen an over 390% growth in the program. And last year alone, between 2022 and 2023, we saw a 30% increase in Green Lease Leaders applicants and winners. So overall, this really demonstrates that green leasing is gaining momentum and traction.
But despite those strides, green leasing will need to scale more quickly if commercial real estate and the world are going to meet their 2030 goals. And that won't be easy, given several challenges to the green leasing process, including lack of awareness, lack of internal buy-in, and lack of coordination between ESG and leasing teams. Here's Lee again.
Oftentimes, these lease negotiations don't involve the ESG team. So this green leasing knowledge and just knowing about the benefits of green lease clauses might not reach the leasing team or brokers involved in these lease negotiations. And then similarly, during a transaction, if the other party asks about sustainability, the leasing team might not realize that their own organization has an ESG team to reach out to and involve in the process.
Besides, while more tenants and owners are coming to the table on sustainability, green lease clauses address questions that are not easily answered, like, what data is shareable and what is proprietary? Who pays for energy retrofits and improvements? Who benefits? Meanwhile, larger tenants with longer lease terms have more bargaining power than smaller companies in multi-tenant buildings. Scott Beal, an attorney with Solomon Ward, Sidemorm and Smith, characterizes the situation like this.
I think it's being driven by the board saying, we want to look more green. We don't want to overpay for being green. And the landlord saying, well, this may benefit this tenant, but I don't know if in 20 years, this technology is still going to be cutting edge technology. Am I going to have to replace it for a tenant in 10 or 20 years who says, well, that's worthless to me.
Current market conditions are also impacting the nature and number of green clauses, Beal says.
We've got two different markets in the industrial and in the office. Office, clearly there's less demand we're seeing out. Office landlords are probably at this point not willing to put a lot of additional capital into buildings unless, you know, a tenant's willing to take multiple floors. But in order to do it as sort of an incentive for to get tenants to go to a building because it's green, I think they're worried about much greater things right now, like covering their mortgages and making sure that they're able to survive what is currently a difficult market for office. In industrial, I think you see a lot of demand still for industrial space. And I think landlords are able to basically take a stronger position that, you know, if you want that, you need to pay for it.
JLL is on a mission to see not just more green leases, but better ones. According to Paulina Torres, Research Manager, Sustainability and ESG at JLL, many so-called green leases today do not address the split incentive.
Part of it is because they've been sort of inherently limited in their use in that they've mostly remained as boilerplate clauses mm-hmm. around energy, water, or waste. And there's also still no industry-wide guidance on minimum levels of green leases. So a lease can include, for example, one clause on water management and technically qualify as a green lease. And that's not necessarily going to drive change, right? Especially when we think about the emissions of a building.
Torres is a co-author of JLL's Green Leasing 2.0, a guide/research paper that was released in the spring. It is an update to an earlier publication, now referred to as Green Leases 1.0.
We're positioning as Green Leasing 2.0 sort of represents a new business partnership on management and operation and financing as well. At its core, 2.0 focuses on shared value, achieving benefit for both landlords and tenants, you know, achieving reduced costs through operational improvements, agreements on co-investment, and regular data sharing and monitoring. And, you know, any capital expense that improves operational efficiency or reduces emissions is expected to provide benefit to both owners and occupiers. And Green Leasing 2.0 should essentially enable that this value be shared in proportion to who makes it happen. We also kind of had a subtle change from Green Leases 1.0 to Green Leasing 2.0 to sort of emphasize the fact that it's moving from a static action of an event that occurs once in the lease negotiation phase to a living document and something that is active that should sort of surface throughout the tenancy lifecycle and throughout the lease term.
So Green Leasing 2.0 recommends that every green lease contain clauses that address the split incentive, as well as protections regarding energy performance ratings and certifications. Clauses around data sharing on energy, water, and waste would also be expected.
And again, data sharing is just the first step to any further action, and it allows parties to make informed decisions and also kind of ensures that parties can make measurable or set measurable goals and corresponding KPIs so that both parties are not necessarily looking at the lease language itself, but are looking at the actions that they can follow through with so that these clauses aren't necessarily about the language, but they're about the outcomes that they bring about and bring on for these parties.
Meanwhile, after interviewing 800 occupants as part of its research for the guide, JLL concluded that tenants are now more likely than owners to be driving green lease negotiations. And Torres says, they are looking for their leases to include not just boilerplate clauses, but more carbon-specific language on things like lower emissions, electrification, embodied carbon, and EV charging stations.
And these priorities are going to require that landlords and tenants make complex choices together regarding the real estate that they're occupying or that they own. Capital expenditures, operating expenses, and use for EV charging stations, for example, are really all up for deliberation. And these are all things that should be discussed and agreed upon in the lease.
Clauses on cost recovery and data sharing are already minimum standards for the Institute for Market Transformation and the Green Lease Leaders Program. IMT also specifies that sustainability contacts for both parties be included in the lease document. Marla Thalheimer is Senior Director of Business Engagement for IMT.
It's pretty basic, but what can happen is, like, if the landlord is trying to, you know, get the data, or the tenant is trying to, it could go both ways, right? And if they're not talking to the right person, they're just not going to be able to make progress. So it just helps save a lot of time and a lot of aggravation if you can immediately get to the right person that you need to speak to.
Even if an owner or tenant does not feel like a green lease leader, Thalheimer urges they visit the greenleaseleaders.com website, where they can find many resources, including case studies and sample green leases, that will help them get started or gauge their progress.
And it's attainable. So they might just take a look. We have a lease audit tool. So they could, you know, explore that lease audit tool to see, like, hey, you know, maybe our lease is enough and we actually meet the requirements for it to be a green lease leader. So just really encourage people to jump in and see how far they can get with the program and use all of the resources that we have to offer.
IMT is also trying to elevate the green leasing process. And listeners can go to IMT's website for resources on performance-based leasing, which is designed to help stakeholders comply with new reporting guidelines and emission standards.
And this performance-based leasing is kind of this next step of some additional lease clauses that can go in that can help make sure that both parties have expectations, that both parties know what they need to do to make sure that they are able to meet that performance goal. Otherwise, there's a risk of a fine. And then it also can define what happens if there is a fine, right, or a fee for noncompliance. So very important to take that next step, particularly if you have very strict net zero goals or if you're in a strict BPS jurisdiction, check out the performance-based leasing, because that's an area that is going to, you know, again, help you navigate these waters, you know, particularly in these BPS jurisdictions.
Despite the challenging leasing environment and other hurdles, green lease clauses should be viewed as an opportunity rather than an impediment, according to IMT's Diana Lee.
The reality is, most of the time, green lease clauses are not a barrier. With more and more companies adopting ESG goals, green leasing can actually be an asset. And our stance is that everyone should start off with green lease clauses on the table. If they get negotiated out of a few leases here and there, so be it. But the fear should not stop a green lease process altogether.
That's all for this episode of Sustainability Street. Thanks for joining me. If you have any questions about this episode or suggestions for future episodes, please reach out to me at therese.fitzgerald@cpe-mhn.com. Bye for now.